This is a WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years.
Talking.
Since 1947.
This is a WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we do have guests in studio from MTSU. We have Dr. Ken Curry, chair of the MTSU Department of Engineering Technology, and Julie Powers, outreach coordinator for MTSU's Engineering Technology. And I guess starting off the conversation, a brand new building on the MTSU campus. So kind of tell us where we stand on that new building and how many years in the making.
It's been about 4 years since we started the planning for the new building. We had a little bit of a hiccup because of inflation. Everybody kind of knows what that was like. And we started out with an estimate of about $50 million and jettisoned up to about $75 million. So we actually had to get an additional supplement from the state, which we were able to do.
And how large of a building is this?
It's 89,000 square feet.
And what different classes or what variety of classes will this building hold?
It will cover all of our engineering technology classes. It doesn't cover any of the gen ed classes like calculus and physics and some of those, although we do have a fairly large auditorium of about 160 seats that will allow for calculus-based sections and physics and some of those kind of classes in that building as well.
And then when do students start back on the campus, and when will this, or will it be open in time for all of that?
I think the classes start on August the 25th, and I don't think that we're going to have any difficulty meeting that. We are having a few, kind of getting some of the kinks out of the building as we speak. So we were just talking about whether or not we're going to be able to be in the building in our new offices or not. So that's to be seen.
And Julie, what are some of the different aspects of this new building that stand out to you?
I think as far as my position as outreach coordinator and the recruiting efforts, I think the building will help sell the program itself. It's state of the art. We have so many different labs with state of the art equipment that's been donated by several of our industry partners. So I think the growth that we're going to see from the building itself will really be a huge asset to MTSU as well as the community.
What do some other colleges have as far as engineering goes, and what do their buildings look like, or are they dated?
Well, I think, you know, everybody is trying to improve and upgrade their engineering programs, and it's tough because, I mean, the technology is changing a lot faster than what you can build or what you can bring in. So I think one of the things that we're really excited about is we've got some of the latest state-of-the-art technology that's been donated by some of our automation integrator partners like Automation Nth and Assurant. They are kind of helping us lead the way instead of just always lagging.
Do you have a lot of partners in engineering that are here in Tennessee?
Oh, yeah. We've got Nissan, Assurant,
Schwann Cosmetics.
Yeah, Automation Nth. So we've got a lot of industry here in just in Rutherford County, but we're trying to broaden out and try to include, you know, some of the neighboring counties as well.
You know, it's interesting because when you hear the word cosmetics, you don't think of engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as I came on, a lot of our students, or you think engineering, especially here in Tennessee, you think automotive. And I like to tell them, anything you touch and see, there's an engineer behind it. So think bigger and broader. But yes, Schwann Cosmetics is a fully automated company. So it's great to have the students come in, and we do field trips to see those companies so you can see just behind the scenes of exactly what an engineer does in that field.
Yeah, and so Assurant is another one of our leading sponsors, and they basically refurbish cell phones. Mm-hmm. Maybe $10 to $20 million cell phones a year. And so they were doing that all manually. And so now they're basically working on their automation scheme for a lot of that work. So they're a huge partner.
So how heavily do robotics and AI fit into the picture today for engineering?
Oh, it's huge. Mm-hmm. It's really huge. We've actually branched out to include what are called cobots. And these are collaborative robots that can work alongside humans. You know, most of the times when you see robots moving in a factory floor, they're moving at such a speed that you don't want to have humans around them. But these cobots are designed to actually operate at a slower speed, but they also have the ability that once they feel some type of any one of the joints hits any kind of an obstruction, everything shuts down so that you don't have to worry about it whipping around and pushing or really harming someone.
So where do humans fit into the picture? I mean, these students, once they graduate, where are they going in the workforce?
Yeah, I think a lot of our students are going to automation integrators. They're also going to automotive companies, but also battery manufacturers like Ultium Cells. So there's just a lot of opportunities for our mechatronics engineering students as well as our engineering technology students.
I know we've seen a lot of growth in the battery sector here in Tennessee specifically. Where does that look to be going in the future?
I think it's going to be great. I mean, as much as we see kind of a back and forth about priorities, I think electric cars are here to stay, and our partners like GM and Nissan, we'd really like to be involved more with Ford Blue Oval in West Tennessee, but it's a little bit tough, but simply because of the distance, and I think they've pulled back on some of their plans for the F-150 Lightning.
I know you said you had a lot of partners who were helping with this new building. Is there an idea, or do you have a base number as far as how much has been donated into the program that's being used in this new building?
I think right now our total donation is probably gifts in kind and actual cash is probably close to about 2.5 million, maybe three. So we've received a lot of new equipment. I mean, probably we've received a gift in kind, probably close to $1.25 million of actual equipment that we've installed brand new in the building.
Now, it's neat that you said these college students will be able to take field trips, if you would, to some of these companies. You don't think about field trips for college students, but it sounds like a cool hands-on experience.
It is. And sometimes, I mean, you get the blinders up, you're in the classroom, and you have this idea of what you're going to be doing, but the robotics class does a great job of going out to different companies and integrators to see exactly what that looks like, even if it's a Nissan field trip or to a Schwann Cosmetics or Automation Nth.
What are some other areas of engineering that maybe we don't think about as a general public that you're going to be teaching in this new building?
We're really hoping that we can get a systems engineering program started, and so we're working on the letter of need for getting THEC approval. I think that would be great. Probably would have concentrations. One of them would probably include aerospace engineering as well. So we've got big plans for that, and I'm hoping that within this next month or two we'll have the paperwork for that.
So aerospace engineering, would that be on the level of like designing planes? What would that
be? No, I think it would be a concentration within systems engineering. So it's not a full-fledged aerospace engineering program. So we've been talking with aerospace, our aerospace department, about what this would look like. So, I mean, we're still in the business of fleshing that out, but I would hope that it would be a concentration within the systems engineering.
That'd be interesting. So would that be on the MTSU campus here in Murfreesboro, or would part of that be in Shelbyville?
Some of it might be in Shelbyville, because a lot of it has to do with aerodynamics and wind tunnels, and you don't do anything on a huge scale. You actually scale it down to show students what is the impact of aerodynamics on the overall system.
How many different departments on the university's campus would be sending students through the engineering program in the new building?
Right now, we're at about almost close to 600 students between engineering technology and our mechatronics engineering program. We'd hope to probably increase that, hopefully by 25% within the next year or two.
And do students seem excited about all this?
Very.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
What types of feedback have you gotten so far?
Well, from our graduating seniors, they were disappointed because they didn't get to be a part of it. But for everybody else, I mean, they're over the moon. I mean, even it's having the freshmen come in or meeting with the parents during orientation. It's they're excited to be the first class in and to see this out for the first 4 years of their degree.
So when you meet with parents of these students, do a lot of their moms, dads say, you know, I went through engineering programs, you know, years ago and maybe XYZ college, whatever campus. Do they tell you that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have some that have said, when I graduated from here in Voorhees, like this is a major upgrade. So
It's quite different from years past, obviously.
100%.
And when you look at technology and when you look at different automation and everything, what is it that stands out to you that is the most interesting part of technology and engineering?
I think really we've got a brand new area on robotics and automation. I think that's going to be a place where we'll have a lot of capstone projects there. I think students will just have a blast being able. We've had some of these new cobots for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, but we just have not had any space to actually operate them. So we've kind of said, well, okay, let's just put them off for now, and then we'll be able to. And so we're looking forward to having those up and running.
Now, the company behind the building of this of the new building, they're Tennessee based, right? And the architects as well, I believe.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Wold Architects and Cooper Carey. Wold has got offices in Brentwood. I think Denark is the general contractor. I think they also have offices here in Tennessee.
So how much hands-on work have you guys had to do with the construction itself of the building? Have you had to go in once a week and say, well, no, this light needs to be over here?
Well, I mean, we have a project manager, Melissa Parker, who is a MTSU employee. She has done most of the interfacing with the architect and the general contractor. Thank God. I can't imagine me doing my job and having to do what she's doing because it's not possible. And so she's done a great job, and we're just, we've had a few hiccups, like where I would go in and we're bidding a brand new what's called a vertical lift module for doing vertical storage. And I was kind of under the understanding that we had one height and we didn't. So it's in a walkthrough that I noticed that there were some lines that were in the way. But Melissa was quick to get that changed, and it just got changed. So
now, have you already got your office set up within the building?
That's what I'm doing today. Mm. Yeah.
Is that exciting?
It's going to be. I've moved my office 4 different times in the last 10 years. So I'm just like going each time. I cut down my boxes by about 15% to 20%, and I'm down to about 5 or 6.
So after this move, this will hopefully be the last.
This will be it.
Okay.
Forever.
And again, as we close out, tell us again the size of the building, when completion is expected to be done, and when students will actually be in there.
Yeah, 89,000 square feet. It will officially be done when we do the ribbon cutting, and students will be able to move in. I'm hoping that we can actually get some students to come on part-time paid to help us get everything set up. So we'll probably have an army of students that we'll try to hire just to get us going.
Now, 89,000 square feet, is that what it started out as, or have you had to add on in any ways?
We cut back a little bit, but a lot of it was a little bit of value engineering when we saw the budget going over. But when the state came along and provided us with extra funding, then we were able to kind of then go to the next, to the full amount.
Now, are there pictures online where folks can see what this looks like?
Yeah, most definitely. Okay. Yeah.
Just Google, I guess, the new building and MTSU.
Applied Engineering Building.
And they should come up.
Yep.
Easy enough.
Let's hope.
Again, with us today, Dr. Ken Curry and also Julie Powers, both with MTSU's Department of Engineering Technology. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
dozens of vendors, one local tradition,
plump, juicy tomatoes.
The Farmer's Market, every Tuesday and Friday, 7 a.m. to 1.
Pick fresh this morning
at Lane Agri Park in Murfreesboro.
Farm fresh eggs.
At 315 John R. Rice Boulevard.
50 years strong. Come see why.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. When Kristen said, okay, you know, when we're going to do the remodel, because we're celebrating 35 years, we also wanted to make it more open and inviting, so we made the lobby a lot more open for booth seats, a little bit different colors to kind of still keep it a little up to date, make it fresh. We wanted to make it cozier, make it a little bit brighter for people to see, to pay homage to where we have been the entire time. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
If you're planning an upcoming trip and want to include your pet, we have all the travel supplies you'll need at Animal City. This is Amanda at Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. Animal City is Murfreesboro's hometown family-owned pet store. We've had the honor and pleasure of serving the community for 33 years. If you want to see some photos of our adorable pets, feel free to check out our Facebook page, Animal City of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street, right here in Murfreesboro.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
With us now in studio, we have Richard Lewis, Associate Professor in the MTSU Department of Media Arts and the eSports and Content Creation Coordinator, as well as the Faculty Advisor for the MTSU eSports Club. So, Richard, what is eSports?
So eSports is basically competitive video games. So just like you would have any, you know, traditional sports that you think of, football and basketball, things like that, we have competitive video games playing against other universities. There's, you know, high school eSports, there's collegiate eSports, and, you know, professional eSports, which is a huge industry that I think a lot of people aren't really sort of familiar or aware of.
So will MTSU students be learning how to create some of these video games?
Not creating the video games themselves. So the concentration in content creation is for a lot of players and teams. They need to stream and broadcast what they create. So it's slightly different. You know, in esports, you don't have, I mean, there are arenas that sell out and actual people watching the players compete, you know, on a stage. But even in those cases, you still have to stream the content to a big screen. But most of the time, you're also sort of streaming online. You're creating sort of a brand for your team, for your, as a player. You're marketing yourself. So understanding aesthetics. So that's what this concentration is. The content creation concentration is designed to give students all of the different skills that they would need to be in the esports sort of industry that way and be successful on the content creation side. And then we have a in the sports and leisure department, they created a concentration in esports coaching. So all of the different levels of teams that you have now, you also need coaches for those. So really understanding, you know, how to coach people, but then sort of taking it towards the esports arena.
Interesting. Is there a lot of money in this direction?
The industry is like expanding and growing, and there's a lot of funds in the industry itself. It's been you know, teams started out, you know, many years ago as just a team, but now it's a multi media conglomerate. The FaZe Clan sort of started out a number of years ago and is now one of the largest multimedia conglomerates out there. So it's an exciting area. I think students have a lot of interest in it.
So a student who is a part of this, they're going to learn how to go through that process of setting up a video gaming system that is then broadcast to millions of people, but also broadcast it to a full auditorium of those who are spectators watching these games take place.
You could Yeah, you could do either, both. Most of the time, there are large tournaments that happen in esports. So you can hold an esports tournament, an event to sort of have all the players sort of play in place, you know, in a live arena that way. Or a lot of sort of online streaming. It's also understanding, you know, the editing and the aesthetics and sort of the media component. That's, you know, where the College of Media and Entertainment really comes in. There's a lot of, you know, understanding sort of the students actually get to choose a minor, potentially even more than one in our college. So, you know, there's advertising, there's PR, there's live production, post-production, so they can really sort of dive into the areas that they're most interested in that way.
So some of these competitions that take place, and let's say they're in an auditorium of sorts, mm-hmm. are they sellout type facilities? I mean, are these places full with spectators?
For the professional competitions, they are. If you look at like League of Legends Worlds competition, I mean, it's a huge production like the Super Bowl. They have pregame and all of the stuff that happens before the actual competition, and then the competitions itself and they have a lot of, you know, because it's all digital, they'll create, you know, that sort of entertainment event with a lot of bands and sort of performances that happen before all of the competition, and then you get into the actual competition itself.
So there's a lot that goes into these.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, probably millions of dollars just to actually produce this for an audience.
Yes.
It's hard to believe. I mean, years ago, would you ever imagine this being something that's part of a college?
No, I mean, it's been growing through the years. I think the concentrations that we created here are sort of newer and unique in the area. There are a number of schools around the country that have had sort of esports specific programs already, but for the most part, it's a field that has been sort of developing and growing, and most people in the industry, you know, they got degrees in different things, but then they had to learn these additional skills and how they relate to esports. So the goal here is that the students will actually be, you know, learning all of those skills and how they specifically align to esports.
Now, according to ZipRecruiter, it looks like the average annual pay for a job in the esports industry is around $156,000 a year. But yet, this is also the type of job that your grandmother would look at you and say, when are you getting a real job?
Right, yeah. And it's always, you know, depends on the job that you're getting in the industry. But there's opportunities, right? And it's a growing field, you know. How much of that sort of average is the professional players' salaries? I mean, if you probably look at the, you know, at the NFL, right? Like, not everyone gets the player salaries, but some people are getting the player salaries, and that is a possibility. And then there's management and all of the sports management, public relations, all of those kind of things that go into an esports team, the same as they go into NFL.
So these esports players who are mm-hmm. playing the video games themselves, are they signing multi-year contracts with some companies?
They could sign with a professional team, yeah, and name and image license, all of those kind of things. They're getting sponsorships and those kind of deals. So yeah, it's like any other sort of professional athlete, right, that you would think of. The esports is right there along with it.
Now, again, Richard Lewis in studio with us, associate professor in the MTSU Department of Media Arts and the esports and content creation coordinator. Several years back, what were you doing before you were doing this?
I actually am an animation. I teach in the animation program here at MTSU, and I was in the animation industry for a number of years before moving to teach here at MTSU. So animation is a part of video gaming, and you and I took I wasn't, you know, really familiar with the esports industry as much until I took over as the advisor for the club, and it's been growing. We have basically 16 different teams this past year, 70 players competing in different video game titles against other colleges. We had a silver place team in nationals, and then the division Eastern Conference division champ in the fall. So we have a growing program, and I had my animation background, but I've had to learn a lot about esports as I took over as the club advisor. And that's where I was like, well, there's a lot of opportunities for more than just, you know, a student club organization. This is something that students can get careers in. And that's where I worked with the dean of the College of Media and Entertainment, Beverly Keel. And it was a, you know, the creation of this concentration as well as the coaching concentration was a collaborative effort with a number of stakeholders across campus, like deans and program coordinators across campus to sort of get all of the different sort of skills and opportunities that students would need to get into this.
So to a certain extent, is this going to be, or is it becoming, the new let's go watch live football or let's go watch this video game competition?
For a lot of, you know, our incoming students, this is something that they grew up on. So for many of us, we've never sat down and watched a video game competition, but for our students, that is something that they have done regularly, basically for most of their life. They feel as passionate about the teams, the esports teams that they're watching and getting involved in and understanding the players and how that works, the same as you know, many do with baseball. You know, there'll always be both, right? But I think that it's a growing share, particularly of the younger generations, are really sort of passionate in this area.
What are some of the different types of video games they're playing whenever they're playing before a crowd?
The one of the largest sort of original is League of Legends sort of game, and then there's a number of first person shooters, Overwatch 2, Valorant, we have and then Rocket League, which is basically soccer with cars, so a lot of fun stuff there. But we even have teams that use the Nintendo Switches, so Super Smash Brothers, right, is a competitive esport, and there's Splatoon 3, Halo, and Call of Duty. So a lot of opportunities in different areas for the different games that people play. And actually, one of the largest esports is actually chess, because now chess is played online a lot. So when it's played online, it's technically an esport that way.
And how realistic are the graphics looking today compared to just 5 years ago?
They're always just bumping it up and making better, more realistic graphics that can be done in real time. That's been the major emphasis. So like every couple years, you just sort of double the the computing rate, as essentially, you know, as the processors and the hardware, it all gets faster, then it allows for more, you know, more detailed and realistic rendering. So it's really getting, you know, next level now.
Are we going to get to a point where it's going to be hard to tell between a video game graphic versus real life?
I think we'll always sort of be able to tell the difference just because it's on a screen, or, you know, but at the point where you get into sort of VR and combining sort of some of the new AI technologies that could make it sort of photorealistic, you know, in real time, that's something that is possible.
And again, to learn more about this, do we just search MTSU and what department? Department of Media Arts and Esports?
Yeah, the College of Media and Entertainment has the esports content creation. You'll find that in our program pages there.
Again, Richard Lewis with us, associate professor in the MTSU Department of Media Arts and the Esports and Content Creation Coordinator, and then as well as the faculty advisor for the MTSU Esports Club. That's a hefty title, a lot of stuff there. Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
You feel great at Adam's Place.
Melanie teaches all of our exercise classes. I do the stretch and balance.
Alan Butcher.
Avis, our water aerobics instructor, helped me to overcome some of my arthritis pain, and it's just a wonderful thing that we have here.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adam's Place. Call me for more information about Adam's Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adam's Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Joining us in studio, we have Dr. Cynthia Chafin, Director of the Center for Health and Human Services, and also Sarah Gwynn, Senior Project Coordinator for the Center for Health and Human Services in the Office of Prevention, Science, and Recovery. How are both of y'all doing this morning?
Doing great. Thank you.
Doing great.
Tell us more about what you guys do there at MTSU.
Yeah, so we are the Center for Health and Human Services. We are a public health research and outreach center on campus. We are not affiliated with any one particular department or program. We work under the Office of Research Services, and we are a grant-funded department on campus. So we get all of our operations through external funding and sponsorships.
So what does a day in that office look like?
A day in our office is always exciting. We work on all sorts of different projects. We are not limited to any one area. Our mission and vision centers on advancing the health and well-being of Tennesseans. So health is a pretty big umbrella. Lots of things fit under it. We do most of our work in communities throughout Tennessee. We are not all campus-based. We are out in just about everywhere in the state doing different types of work.
Rural health, how does that fit in? Because I know there's been a lot of talk about expanding a lot of medical services in more rural areas of the state.
Tennessee is predominantly rural, so by virtue of that, most of the work that we do is done in rural Tennessee communities. A big part of that is access to resources. Those communities don't have some of the things that our larger metro areas have. So a big part of what we do is ensuring that they have resources for whatever the particular area is that we're working with them on. I know we're going to talk a lot about substance use today. So as an example, we're bringing resources to them specific to substance use that they may not get because they're located in a rural area. It's a huge part of what we do.
And what kind of substance use are we talking here?
In particular, we're talking about opioids. We've received several large grants specific to opioids. I know Sarah's going to talk a little bit about Rutherford County and what's going on here, but we do a lot of work throughout the state specific to opioids. It's a national epidemic.
And then, Sarah, where do we stand in Rutherford County on the abuse of opioids?
So it's been a journey. So between 2019 and 2022, our county saw a spike in opioid-related overdose deaths. Between those years, it increased 37%. And we topped out, I think, in the highest year of loss was around 140 lives that we lost due to opioid-related overdoses. We've made a lot of progress in the last 3 years. Now our overdose death rates are now
back to that sort of pre-pandemic level, but we still have a lot of work to do because while people are not dying due to this, there's still high levels of substance misuse that's happening. We've just gotten really good at getting our overdose reversal medications out into the community. And so we're making some headway, but we're not quite getting at the root of the problem. And it is a multifaceted problem in our community.
What do you do about the cases where people truly need these pain medications for real uses? How do you go about combating? We need to make sure they don't overuse, but yet at the same time, we understand there is a purpose.
There is a purpose. That medication was a game changer, especially when it first came out. It allowed for people to start having surgery and be able to, you know, have pain-free healing periods. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that over time, one of the issues is the overprescribing of it, which is sort of what has led us to this current issue that we have of proliferated misuse of this substance. But the thing is that we have to educate prescribers and providers who have for many years just prescribed it like candy because they were told by the pharmaceutical companies that it was safe and non-addictive. And so we're having to make sure the prescribers are educated and they're also educating the patients that say, you know, hey, this is how the medication should be used. Only take it while it's indicated through your pain levels. And also, here's some alternative pain management recommendations so that you don't have to go and get an opioid prescription from your dentist, because it's actually shown that doing an opioid for tooth pain doesn't actually help you. Like, it might make you feel good, but you know what you should do? Take ibuprofen if you can. So there's a lot of different directions to educate to help minimize the use of opioids in our community.
I would guess one of the glaring problems is you don't have a lot of, I guess, answers in the way of, well, instead of using this opioid, we could put in a spinal cord stimulator. But yet the problem is with those stimulators, they don't truly solve the problem. And a lot of cases, they actually don't work or cause further problems. So what else do you have in store for those who are experiencing nonstop pain?
Well, I guess they just need to be working with their doctors. I'm not well versed in that aspect of appropriately prescribed opioid medication usage. My work is mostly focused on when it's misused in the community, but just having really open conversations. If a person is in pain and they're not wanting to take opioids, there's conversations that they can have to sort of divert that to alternative pain management methods.
And do you think we are at a level now to where things are going to be more mainstream? Are things going to change much from this point on for as far as the prescription of these medications?
Well, I mean, there's two sources here. We've got your prescribers, getting their medications through the pharmacy, maybe someone's
the normal way,
and then there's the illicit way. And what we're seeing is as prescribing becomes more restricted and fewer prescriptions and pills are being brought home and in people's medicine cabinets, that's restricting access for the illicit methods. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing our communities being flooded with synthetic opioid analogs. And what that means is it's the street stuff. When it comes to some of the substance testing that our sheriff's office is doing, we're still seeing opioid. We're seeing fentanyl, you know, still the party stuff like cocaine and MDMA. And, you know, those things are still happening. But the top substances are the opioids that are manufactured outside of pharmaceutical
companies. So it almost seems like if we go too far one way, we're going to have a rebound effect too far the other way with the illegal street drugs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And people sometimes will graduate from those synthetic opioids to like methamphetamines. Mm-hmm. And methamphetamine right now is so damaging to the brain structure.
And we only have 20 seconds left. So next time, I guess we ought to have more time for this. But it sounds like an interesting situation for sure to learn more about. And if anybody would like to learn more about, I guess, what would be the best thing to do? Google MTSU and then
Yeah, if they want to visit our website, chhs.mtsu.edu, we have some great content on there with some of our projects, and we would love to come back and talk about all of them or any of them.
Sounds good. Again, thank you for joining us.